grateful to be here with you all. We're in the middle of our spring practice period, and we are taking up the spiritual life of power, and the book we're reading is Thich Nhat Hanh's book, The Art of Power. And every week there's a sheet of questions and reading suggestions and practice guidelines. And I notice that they're not being posted out here, and I'm wondering, are people getting those? They're available by email, so I'm just wondering how many people are getting those. Okay, and how many people who aren't getting them would like to get them? So what you can do is just to email Mountain Lamp. If you go to the website, then the email address is on the website, and they'll be sent out on a weekly basis. I think we're on week 5 now. And part of our spring practice period is a non-residential retreat, which will be in the middle of April. And it'll be here at the Seattle Practice Center. And to register for that, you can also do that at the Mountain Lamp website. And I believe there's also registration forms here at the Practice Center. So you can do it either way. And there was just a couple of changes in the spring schedule that I wanted to announce. I noticed that the spring schedule is listed out there in the kitchen, and it says that we're going to have Buddha's birthday up at Mountain Lamp on May 7th. And because two of our monastic brothers are coming the end of May, the Children's Sangha asked that we do something during while they're here, and that it'd be too much to do both Buddha's birthday and to have another event at the end of the month. So May 7th, actually we're going to have a birding day, so there still is something happening if anybody wants to join us to follow the spring birds through the woods, through the marshes, up the hillsides. We'll be doing that on May 7th. And of course there's a very special event of the Day of Mindfulness with Brother Fa Po and Brother Fa Day coming at the end of on May 28th. And they'll also be here in Seattle on Thursday evening, which is normally the time when our People of Color Sangha meets. And so everyone is invited to come join our monastic brothers on that evening. Very special to have them come be with us. Very much looking forward to it. We as human beings always need to live by water. And some people live by water so they can fish for fish. And other people live by water to be with humans. And some people live by water only looking within to find the truth. The Buddha said that water is like all dharmas. And dharmas in this context is all things. When you see dharmas written with a small d, that refers to everything. It refers to you and to me, to our cushions, to our paper, to the lights, to the plane overhead, all things. And when you see dharma with a capital D, that it means the referring to the dharma the Buddha pointed to, which is the way all things work, the truth of all things. And so the Buddha said that all dharmas, like water, are ultimately liberated, and they are without an abode. all things are always flowing. All things are not held by anything, but always movement. And then the 13th century Japanese master Dogen said, but to remember that although all dharmas are in a state of liberation without any bonds, at the same time, all dharmas are abiding in place. This place right now. And tonight I wanted to talk about water. And water is a metaphor for both our practice, and water is a metaphor for realization. Water is constantly flowing, and at the same time, it takes many different forms. It's not something that we capture and hold. It's always moving. There was a time when I was working as a biologist and I was doing surveys of streams up in the mountains. And it was very wonderful, wonderful work. I'd go to the very beginning trickle of water high in the mountains and then begin to follow it. And like our practice, you know, when we first come to practice and we come back to our breath and we breathe in and we breathe out and we let go of all our busyness, all our worries, all our planning, all our projects, and it feels absolutely wonderful and pure and clear. So it was when I first would come to the very beginning of a stream, high in the mountains, in a deep meadow, wildflowers. So beautiful it was. And then I would begin to follow that stream because I found it so beautiful. And the stream would get, as it went downhill, would go over many beautiful cascades, and eventually it would enter into the forest, leaving the alpine region and enter into the forest. And there sometimes it'd be hard to follow it because there would be so many brambles along the shore of the stream. And there'd be times where I felt I'd completely lost it. I was completely muddled and confused and I couldn't find it at all, but maybe if I just listened carefully, I could hear the sound of water. But I couldn't get close to it. I couldn't get next to it. There was just too much in the way. There were too many blackberries, thorns, too thick, much thicket. And when we start, after we've been practicing for a while, and we start to find that sometimes it's really difficult to go to Sangha. Everything that we thought we were going to Sangha for, we're not finding it there anymore. That sort of that clear, open, wonderful space, it's like, oh, I gotta go, you know, and it sort of becomes more like a chore. And it's like we almost lose track of what our practice is about. It seems far away from us. And yet if we can just remember to come back and take a breath, and even though it feels onerous in the morning to have to go to our cushion and sit down, if we can just stop and sit there for a minute, just listening, just breathing, even though it feels like it's still far away, we still hear something calling. We can still hear the sounds of the water. And as I followed those streams, and they went down through the forest, and when they got to the valley bottom, I'd have to actually be walking in the rivers. I'd have to be entering into the water in order to continue to follow that river. And so it is with our practice too. We have to just keep entering into it. Entering into our daily sitting practice, entering into remembering when we're at work to stop, to breathe, to take steps of mindfulness, take steps of peace down the hallway. And touching like that over and over again, you know, we begin to get wet with practice. We begin to understand that there's no way that we're ever really separate. That everything is just in this moment. Sometimes in our minds we get lost and we're thinking about something far away. But as soon as we come back, we see, well, right here and now, this is the only place I'm alive. And this is the only place I can be, no matter what our minds are doing. We start to get a little wet with practice. We start to let the present moment be our guide. And as we continue in that journey of water, we find that you know, we are able to float in the present moment more and more. We are able to be carried by the stream of our lives and stay here. Stay awake. And we find that we begin to get more and more concentrated. In Thay's book, he talks about the five aspects of the spiritual power, and the first one was confidence, the second was diligence, which I've talked about both, the third is mindfulness, which we talk about every time we get together, and the fourth was concentration. And when we find ourselves able to stay simply in the present moment, and as soon as we notice something has come up in our mind, we let it go, we begin to get really concentrated. And it's like the river is very swift. And we're able to stay present even in that speed, even in the midst of the rapids. And it makes for a lot of space inside. And in that space, sometimes things that we have been pushing away for a long time come to visit us. It's like being floating down the river and all of a sudden we find ourselves caught in a big swirl, a big whirlpool. And if we're really concentrated, we're able to just stay present in the midst of that difficulty. And we remember that practice of smiling. And I want to talk a little more about that as a practice. When we find ourselves in a difficult situation in our lives, when we find our hearts heavy, we find someone has made us really mad, we find something that's difficult for us to be with, it helps very much to remember to come back and practice our mindful breathing and to smile. Not to push it away, but to smile as a place of welcoming. A smile of saying, I am in full possession of myself, and I am able to be here with whatever is here. And we find that when we're able to stay in the presence of something that is difficult, with a certain sense of lightness, which is what our smile indicates, a willingness, even an acceptance, then we find that bit by bit, that difficulty lets go of us. And we start to understand it in a different way, and we move free from it. And in that river of our life, then, that whirlpool where we're caught, we move out of it and move into calm waters. In this way, in that, with the art of smiling, that we find that we are bit by bit able to transform suffering, the suffering that we find in our own hearts and in our own lives. And it really is the Buddha's path, because when the Buddha first took the cushion, first sat down under the Bodhi tree, he sat down in order to understand suffering. And when we have, in our looking within, encountered some suffering and been able to be with it, float with it, smile with it, in such a way that it was transformed, and our hearts are set free, then we begin to know the way of practice. Concentration is a very important part of this, and it's one of the reasons that we have retreats, because on retreat we have the opportunity to support each other in practice and enough to get concentrated so that when a difficulty arises, we don't have to run away from it. We don't have to push it away. We also don't have to make a big effort to fix it. Just welcome it. Smile with it. So I want to encourage you this week, as part of the practice guidelines, is that to, in paying attention to your own heart and mind, when you find yourself upset or frustrated, angry, that you stop and you breathe in and breathe out and smile. When you're driving down the highway, 70 miles an hour, and somebody cuts you off, and you know the first thing that arises is a sense of fear. The second thing that arises immediately on its heel is this anger and that jerk. Is to take yourself in hand. And to breathe in, breathe out, and to smile at yourself. You don't have to smile at the other guy, just smile at yourself. Smile at your anger, smile at your frustration, smile at your fear. Yes. And we find that when we're able to do that, when we're able to really deeply accept the suffering that is in our own hearts and minds, we do something shifts. I remember once sitting early in the morning and being really, really tired, just and sitting and just going, falling asleep. Have you ever had that experience where you're sitting and you start to tip over and catch yourself? It's like, oh. And it's like, I'm supposed to be awake. I'm not. Oh, I'm a terrible meditator. I can't do this right. And oh, why do I always fall asleep? And anyway, I was having one of those mornings like that. And I just stopped all of how I'm supposed to be practicing, how I should be, how my practice should be, oh, I should be getting more sleep. All the words, I stopped them all. And I just felt the tiredness in my body, the sleepiness in my mind. And I smiled to it. And all of a sudden, I was released. It's like I was completely present. And I saw that sleepiness was, as much as anything, my trying to force myself into something, trying to make myself be other than how I actually really was, instead of really accepting that my body's tired. And as soon as I recognized that and accepted it, I felt free. And in practicing like this, you know, we do, the difficulties that arise, the whirlpools, the thickets, release us. And we're floating free in that beautiful stream, getting larger and larger. And eventually the stream enters the ocean. And there's no sense at all of being separate, just floating. And we realize something that is true about existence. When we look at water, and there's water we see, but there's water we don't see. And our bodies are 75% water. But we don't say it doesn't exist. Your water is always pulled down by gravity. Water in the form of glaciers and snow. It's always pulled down through the mountains, through the valleys, to the oceans. But it also escapes gravity. And it rises to form clouds, fog, and rain. Water is all pervasive. Water penetrates everything. Moves through everything. And even though we know it's pervading everything, we respond to it in forms. We respond to it as clouds, as rain, as lakes, as rivers. And yet the real power of water is that it doesn't discriminate. It flows through all things. It flows through what is good and what is bad. It flows through the just and the unjust. It flows equally within the beautiful and within the ugly. It flows in wellness and it flows equally in suffering.
And this is our true nature as well.
And in our deepest practice of concentration, we don't discriminate. And in that non-discrimination, we are able to turn to anything and welcome it. The suffering and the beauty, the pain and the joy, they exist as one. And when we understand that, through the wisdom of our practice, we learn to respond to everything through compassion. That's the only way to respond. If we put one thing outside of ourselves, then we cannot say that we are truly practicing. So a practice that is really important in our tradition is the practice of metta, the practice of love. And there is, as Anita mentioned right at the very beginning tonight, something that really asks for our practice of love these days, and that is for the people and the situation in Japan. And I was given a prayer that a Japanese monk sent, a request for prayer that he sent to this country that is being distributed throughout practice centers. And I wanted to read parts of it because it asks us to be practicing metta. It starts like this. The damage of earthquake in Japan is devastating. Unable to cool down the reactor, we are facing a possibility of nuclear explosion. Please join our prayer. Feel free to forward this prayer request to anyone. It would be great if more people could pray. Here's a translation of a message from the Issei Shrine in Japan. After the sunset, we need strong power of prayer. Please, everyone, heal the suffering, sadness, anger, worry. Please do not think that this accident will bring justice, but please care for each other. The energy toward conflict and fight is also fueling the things happening right now. So please stop the conflict and stop the fight and change the worrying voice to the power of prayer. Please pray that as many people as possible can be saved. We will be okay if our hearts start connecting with each other. The earth will be healed. There are the sounds, the vibrations of prayer that can release the karma of the earth. And anyone can make a prayer sound. Anyone who can do Reiki, anyone who can do long-distance healing, please direct your energy to the center of Japan. If you can sing, please sing. Humming is fine too. Let the earth listen to the sound. Please send your prayer to the earth to wake up the spirit, and please send gratitude to the earth. I will be in meditation after the sunset, and I will pray for the light shining in the sky, even in the darkness. May everyone be safe. Thank you for supporting my heart at this difficult time. Gratitude for the life. So it points that very much to the practice of metta. And it is a practice that is part of our guidelines for this week, that we all take time to practice metta. And we can practice metta, sending love, as part of our morning meditation.
We can also practice it as part of our walking meditation. So when we breathe in and we breathe out, and we let go of all our ideas of self and other, and we know that we are part of the oneness of water, the oneness of all beings, and we can touch love for ourselves as being part of that great reality. And if there's a little suffering in our heart, we practice the power of water, which is the power of non-discrimination. And we flow with that suffering, breathing in and breathing out. And we flow with it till it's healed. And we know that when it's healed for all beings, for the earth herself, for the people of Libya and Japan. And then it's easy to touch love, because we know that in our minds and hearts we have transformed a little bit of suffering for the sake of everyone, for the sake of hummingbirds and flowers, for the sake of radiation, for the sake of the people we love, and for the sake of the people who cause us difficulty. And we don't discriminate where that love goes. But it always has to start with ourselves. And it starts with ourselves in the both good places and the bad places, in the beautiful and the ugly places, and in the places of wellness and the places of suffering. And we can practice this when we take steps, that we take steps in love for the sake of all beings, not in the abstract, but in the true sense of whether it is our own suffering we are taking steps of love in, or whether it's for something that's big, like the tsunami in Japan, the earthquake. It's big for a species that's going extinct. And when we practice like this, our love becomes as big as the ocean. And we aren't afraid of anything, because we know that all of it is held. All of it is held in the same Buddha realm, in the same Buddha mind. And we know that we are held in that too, and that if we put one thing outside of ourselves, if we put one thing outside of that which we love, then we're not practicing metta. One thing about ourselves, one thing about another. If it is outside of us, then we're no longer practicing metta. In the Discourse on Love, the Buddha said, just as a mother loves and protects her only child at the risk of her own life, we should let our boundless love pervade the whole universe, above, below, and across. Our love will know no obstacles. Our hearts will be absolutely free from hatred and enmity. And just as water knows no obstacles, that is the power of our love. Just as water becomes clouds, fog, rain, so the true love of this universe manifests as you, as me, as airplanes, as tsunamis. Nothing is separate. There's nothing we need to turn our backs from. And it is only with the mind of love, that great freedom of the Buddha, that we truly can look into the nature of the good and the bad equally, without discrimination. The suffering and the wellness of the just and the unjust. Not turning our backs, but bit by bit opening our hearts to be able to love it all. And that is the true liberation of the Buddha mind. And our practice allows us to let go of our deep self-identification that allows that mind of separation to be the source of suffering in the world. There's a few minutes left if anybody has any questions. Question is, does smiling at our deepest sadness somehow suppress it? I think it allows us, smiling at it allows us to welcome it in a way that it doesn't have as much power over us, so that we lose awareness that there's more than just sadness.
More than just what?
More than just sadness. That when we can hold something with some tenderness, then already it begins to be better. And I think the smiling allows us to have that level of acceptance and tenderness. It's the compassion that allows us to be at one with it. I think that that, you know, this week and as we practice, you know, taking steps, you know, with, you know, the deepest sense of compassion for the suffering of the people in Japan. We find that we'll get really strong and very concentrated so that we can take each step, you know, really clearly. And we find that our love will grow and it will get larger so that we can really send something, touch that energy, that field of energy, and not be afraid of that suffering.
Can you elaborate a little bit on where acceptance becomes love, or love becomes acceptance, or are you speaking in terms of them being the same thing, or I'm thinking of water, does one flow into the other, and at what level of meditation does that occur, or I don't know if I'm making it up for
I think acceptance is one level of love. Because with acceptance, we're saying, I can be here. I will be here. I will be here with you. While there's still a me and a you, I will be here. In love, me and you fall away completely. And there is then just that deep sense of no discrimination whatsoever. And I think that's the deepest level of love. In Christianity, it's spoken of as agape love. And I think, you know, acceptance is moving in that direction. I think that, again, you know, as with metta, acceptance has to start with ourselves as well. So often, you know, somebody might do something that's really rude or really obnoxious to it, and we're really offended, and we feel like, oh, I have to accept that person. But I think first we have to accept our own sense of outrage and and put offness and violation or what, however it is expressed. It's like, oh, I'm really put out. And I think we have to always start there. And when we can really accept that about ourselves, then there can be some movement towards maybe understanding of the other, what we see as the other.
When you're doing that, and you're still having the outrage. I mean, looking at that, how do you try that? I mean,
you feel outraged about something, and you come back and you feel some level of awareness and acceptance of the fact that you feel outraged. And you breathe in and you breathe out, and you smile. It's like, oh, I really am outraged. And you continue to stay with that, and with yourself in that. Letting it go, it's there. I'm coming back. And at some point, there's an incredible level of tenderness. Sometimes it's felt like so much compassion for ourselves that we're willing to be here in the midst of this. And it's not about my outrage or their what they did. It's not about any of the story. It's just that I'm willing to be here. And in my willingness to be here, it is to protect all beings. And Kuan Yin will be right there with us. And once Kuan Yin is there, then the outrage is taken care of completely. And we know how to respond.
On this topic, I've always been interested that, at least as the little that I've read, Thich Nhat Hanh, is that he never uses the words release or discharge, and yet he's talking about being with your pain. And I know, for example, sometimes if I'm meditating at a retreat or something, tears streaming down my face because of the pain that I'm experiencing. And for me, that's releasing it. So I'm just curious that maybe I just haven't read far enough, but I never hear him or see him using those words. And yet he said, be with me.
The way I understand that is as soon as we use the word release, then it's we're doing something. You know, it's like we're releasing something. And instead, really, in practice, what we are doing, we are letting, we are giving ourselves into the arms of Avalokiteshvara. We're giving ourselves into this moment until the truth of our existence, which is love, arises and we're taken care of. We're not doing it. It's like the Buddha is holding us. All we are doing is taking refuge moment by moment, coming back. And at some point, something that is more true about who we are than just me doing this takes care of us. And then we find we never have to be afraid of any suffering at all. We're always taken care of. And that's the Buddha way.
Is there a place within what we've just talked about for someone, for a person to let someone else know how they feel about what has transpired?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's really important to be in communication with people. Be in communication, but you know, as practitioners, our first practice is to transform the suffering within ourselves, so we know how to respond and how to communicate in a way that is clear and honest, but isn't damaging. It recognizes that you are me and I am you. And that if I damage you, I damage myself. And so we practice till we understand that well enough, and then that's where we communicate, how we communicate. And it's very important that we communicate.
So the practices for this week, we have so far in our practice period taken on the practice of sitting every morning, every day for at least a half hour, sitting in meditation, practicing walking meditation in a beautiful place in nature, nourishing ourselves with the beauty of spring for at least an hour each week. Standing, meditation whenever we are in a queue at the grocery store, at the bank, waiting for a bus, at work, feeling our feet firmly on the earth, solid as a mountain, breathing solid, deep as a tree, with roots as deep as a tree, breathing in and breathing out. Smiling, like the trees are smiling right now. It's green leaves, flowers. And practice of metta. We'll have that this week. This, stop in your lives each day to breathe. For people who are suffering in the world, for the deep suffering in the world, beings that are suffering. Breathe in a way that has you smiling as well, so that you can touch your love. Take steps touching your love for those that are suffering. Not distinguishing. Discriminating one suffering is worse than another. If you are in a place of anger, then that is a place of suffering. And practice metta for your own suffering. But if you are in a place of openness and freedom, to practice metta for beings who are suffering in the world at this time. Again, with a smile. So that it's really sending love. And I think we're reading chapter 6 in The Art of Power.